This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome to Jikoji. We just finished Rohatsu Sesshin here, which commemorates Buddha's enlightenment. I incorrectly said a few weeks back that it was his parinirvana, which is when he died. He didn't die. He did die. But he died, and we commemorate that with Nehane Sesshin, which is in February, and his death and his parinirvana. But Rohatsu is about his nirvana, his enlightenment, and we had some auspicious things happen this Sesshin. One of them being. Probably know that the Buddha saw the morning star the morning of his enlightenment. And we had the morning star available to us every morning except when the clouds and the rain and the weather prevented it. Venus and a fingernail moon. So that was auspicious. And we had a lot of periods of sitting with no talking, no chanting, no service. And it was porous. You know, sometimes some people may have sat retreats where it's very strict. You miss one period of zazen, you're out. You have a tummy ache, you need more sleep, forget it, sit on your cushion. And this, it was, we take care of ourselves. And we show up willfully, and it worked. So there were some, overall about 26, 28 participants that participated. So to thank you to all of them that showed up and all the help that makes this possible. Last week, one of our teaching priest here is Dan Zigman, and he spoke about career decisions, and he works for Instagram and has quite an entourage of people that he supervises, and I'm sure he's dealing with a lot of young people that are wondering what to do with their aspirations. You know, how do you do it? And I liked what he said, which was, when we consider our decisions, when we consider our goals, that are they wholesome? Are they greed-based or anger-based or delusion-based? And do we covet what we're after? Do we misunderstand the context of what we're doing? And if we don't understand the context, we're surely in delusion. And so during Sesshin, where all you do is come and sit, and then the bell rings and you get up and do walking meditation, and the bell rings again and you sit down again and meet ourselves. And normally, it's like, I'm hungry. I'm going to the refrigerator. My God. Somebody took my ice cream.
It was me, sorry.
Well, it might have been me because I forgot last night. You know, stuff like that happens. But when you sit and you come and meet yourself again and again, after a while, the quiet of our mind shows up. And then when a little bit of the quiet shows up and we have a little bit of that quiet, then when our mind shows up, it's a surprise. What's going on? And so that's what Sesshin's about, is finding out what shows up in us, what's important in our core, what troubles we have, what's really going on. How do we manage with this? And Sometimes it takes just sitting through it to deepen our understandings. And other times it takes other help too. Consulting with people that have deeper understandings. Well, what I want to talk to you about today is the four, a fascicle from Dogen's Shobogenzo. Dogen Zenji, we mentioned his name this morning at service. Dogen lived between 1200 and 1253 and brought Soto Zen, the slow way of enlightenment, to Japan. Formed a Heiji monastery, which is like the mothership of Soto Zen. And he composed many, they're called fascicles. And one of his fascicles is called the Bodhisattva Four Methods of Guidance. Hogan, may I borrow your glasses? Japanese, it's pronounced Bodhisatta Shishobo. And Bodhisatta is a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva in Buddhist terminology is a person, a being, an enlightened being, a relatively enlightened being who works to help others become enlightened before his final nirvana, to save all beings before he saves himself. And it's a being with generous spirit. And that's something that is practiced here in the Soto Zen and Buddhist traditions is the Bodhisattva path. And some of us on the Bodhisattva path take vows. And this afternoon, one of our important Sangha members, Mark Adams, will be taking priest vows. But what I wanted to do was provide some help in what do we do when we have this, when we're meditating, and we get insights, and we develop some deeper peace. How do we keep accumulating that merit? You know, where can we stuff it? There isn't any place to stuff it. You got to give it away. And so these are four ways of giving it, the merit away. One is kind speech. Actually, that's the second one, kind speech. The first one is free giving, dana. And then kind speech, and then beneficial action, skillful means. And the final is, the fourth one is identity action, or also called cooperation. So I'm going to read a little bit from a translation by numerous people, including Kaz Tanahashi, who assembled this volume with others, and I'll read briefly some of this. The Bodhisattva's four methods of guidance are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. Giving means non-greed. Non-greed means not to covet. Not to covet means not to curry favor. Even if you govern the four continents, you should always convey the authentic path with non-greed. It is like giving away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know, offering flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Tathagata Buddha, or again offering treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. Whether it is of teaching or of material, each gift has its value and it's worth giving. Even if a gift is not your own, there is no reason to abstain from giving. The question is not whether the gift is valuable, but whether there is genuine merit. So that's giving. Kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the heart of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. Know that kind speech arises from kind heart, and kind heart from the seed of compassionate heart. Ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others, it has the power to turn the destiny of nations. The third one is beneficial action, is skillfully to benefit all classes of sentient beings, that is, to care about their distant and near future, and to help them by using skillful means. In ancient times, someone helped a caged tortoise. Another took care of a sick sparrow. They did not expect a reward. They were moved to do so only for the sake of beneficial action. And identity action, cooperation, means non-difference. It is non-different from difference from self, non-difference from others. For example, in the human world, the Tathagata took the form of a human being. From this, we know that he did the same in other realms. When we know identity action, self and others are one. So I want to talk mostly about the first one, but actually giving kind speech, beneficial action, and cooperation are all actually different kinds of giving. One of the things we do in Sashi is we eat Orioki style. We have a set of three bowls, and Orioki means just enough. We just get enough. And this sashin, I was head server, and as head server, you know, I did start handing the bowls down from the oats, the fruit, the nuts at breakfast time, if I was covetous, you know, I'd hold on to that bowl of oats. You know, it's like, does anybody, you know, these are my oats. But that doesn't work. You know, we have to share. We have to give the oats. And actually, so the oats moved down the table. And the oats arrived on the table freely offered by the Tenzo, who put great effort into cooking them. And he's giving it away for what's next. All his gift was to assemble it in that pot, cooked, warm, ready to consume. And as the bowl goes down, each of us is taking something that is not ours, but we're freely offering it. And this is something that happened in Buddha's time too. There was a young boy who offered the Buddha a handful of sand. He went up to the Buddha and offered the sand. And in a later life, he became King Ashoka. So what is it to freely offer, to freely give, to wholeheartedly give without any expectation? And there are all these different kinds of confusing interactions we have of, I got a dollar, you know, I'm going to give it to a homeless person, but don't use it for alcohol. You know, you're basically holding on to that dollar bill, not concerned about how it's going to be used, instead of just freely giving it away. And other times it's like, am I giving this because I'm currying favor in someone? Am I giving this because I expect to thank you? Am I giving this for my personal satisfaction? Is it something I don't need, so I don't really need to give it? And what true giving is giving what is needed at the time, wholeheartedly, and give it. And then you're done. And at Oriyoki, when we serve, and the bowl goes to the next pair that serves each other, there's no remnant. There's nothing left over. It's everything's freely given, and the dust is clean. So those are one form of gifts, of giving. Kind speech is another form of giving. And it's a little more difficult. How do we give kind speech without making differences appear, or without any expectation from what is said? And you know, normally kind speech here in the United States, it's been common to say, when you greet someone, you say, "Hi, how are you?" And you're not wanting the long answer. You're just wanting to acknowledge, you know, "I see you, I recognize you, how are you doing?" So there's, when some of these questions are asked, maybe a person's ready to really tell them how they're doing. "I'm not doing so well. My knees hurt, my back hurts, my bank account's empty," and that was a little more than what the person was wanting. They were wanting, you know, greetings. Beneficial action. You know, our livelihoods. Each of us in our lives has gone to work and gotten a paycheck. And that is beneficial action. That is, you know, when you have a job and you get your check, unless it's based right on, you know, your action is immediately based on that check, like you're working production or piecemeal. You know, if you just have a salary, you get paid, you just go and do your job, and the phone call comes, and you respond, "Hello, may I help you?" There's a cooperation already underway that's part of this whole thing. And so we each experience this in our lives. You know, it's not, you know, wanting to become a Buddhist and wanting to already to do that. It's like we already do it. We already go to work and offer our services. And the last one, cooperation, identity action. When I was a householder and had young kids, and my wife was breastfeeding our kids, one at a time, not all at once. But her breast would get so full, it would hurt. You know, I've got a nurse. I can't be doing this. You got to take over the laundry for me. I got a nurse right now. And Tom, one of our kids, was there ready to nurse, you know, and just makes contact and, you know, talk about cooperation, fundamental cooperation of a gift that needs to be given and a gift that needs to be received in that moment. Around here, there's a lot of bodhisattva action. And it's pretty fun, you know, when you're working with other people and as you're approaching the door, somebody exits the door and they hold it open for you to go in. That's cooperation. You've spilled something and passing something along, somebody's already there cleaning it up for you. Your partner across the table from you at Oriyogi. There's carrying a beam, and it's like, you're straining, and somebody else shows up and says, I'll help you out. And then there's teamwork that happens to make it all happen. And it's that kind of cooperation is bodhisattva work. Beneficial actions is bodhisattva work. Kind speech is bodhisattva work. Pure giving is bodhisattva work. And if you haven't tried just giving without any expectation, you know, it is very important to cultivate. You retard your spiritual practice if you are unable to do that. Even in the spiritual realm, there are people that are covetous of station and it's important for us to check our motivations and what are our motivations? Are they pure? You know, is it kindness we're trying to work with? Is it of course we have to take care of ourselves. Of course, like when you get on an airplane, you put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you help other people. If you're out of energy, you feed yourself so you can take care of yourself to go be of use. And actually, when we feed ourselves, we're feeding all these other little organisms in us that help us. Sometimes not so kindly. So that's what I wanted to talk about today, were these four bodhisattva practices: giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and cooperation. And hope that they are useful things to remember, because you probably already do them, but it's just kind of nice to hear them again so that moment into moment, you know, each moment is a pure moment. Each moment is a pure now, and we can be pure in that now. Oftentimes, we're carrying our bag of worries and gripes and fears and everything. I had an interesting encounter with an old friend who came to visit him, and he just griped and he griped and he griped and he griped. And I was like, there was this, finally I said, I listened. And I said, wow, what a bag of worries you have. And in that instant, the bag of worries, he set them down. And he was done with them. So it's possible to set aside our troubles for a moment and return to right now, this precious, exquisite moment of now, where we can stop our mind, stop our body, stop our thinking, and assess where we are in this, in our life, in this place, what the context is, what our circumstances are, what the conditions are that underlie this circumstance. All these things help us in moving through our life one step at a time. We had this schedule that to some people for Rohatsu that looked daunting. But if you just show up, you know, and let the schedule do you instead of you do the schedule. If I try to do the schedule, it's like, how am I going to do it? I need more sleep. My knees hurt too much. I can't, how am I going to do this? But instead, if you just say, I signed up for this, I'm just going to show up. And you keep showing up. For each thing that's there, all you do is show up and put forth your best effort. All you do is show up again. Either in time for the bell and you show up again. Pretty soon we're not fighting anything other than this body we're in. And we learn to adjust it in our posture so that we're comfortable. It's important to be comfortable in our meditation. To be uncomfortable, it has its uses. But it can be overwhelming. It can be, it hurts. But sometimes even the pain of sitting is something to relax into. The pain of our life is important to relax into it. It's different than getting all nervous about it. And even for me, this sesshin, there was a time this body, it could not stay still. It was vibrating. It's like, how do I relax into this? You know, we find the boundaries of what we're capable of. And it's good to find what they are. It's a little different kind of boundary than doing a triathlon or a marathon. Or a backpack trip. Because basically all you do is you come and sit. Sit with yourself. Sit with this self. Sit with this body. Sit with this mind. Sit with this moment. Allow the heart to feel how it feels. It's so important to take that time to feel our heart and feel our heart open. There can be a lot of analytics that happen during meditation, and those can be useful. And they can be detrimental. Pain can be useful. Pain can be detrimental. Pain can turn into suffering. And suffering in proper context of understanding what it is can be turned into just what it is. It might just be a little pain, a little discomfort, and not real suffering. this practice of meditation, this practice that we do of Buddha in Buddhism, Soto Zen, Bodhisattva path. It gives us encouragement. It gives us some guidance. It also raises a lot of questions because we always have questions. But when we're kind to ourselves first and give ourselves space to feel what we feel and meet what we feel as best we can, our whole body meets what we feel. Because we're in a peaceful, more grounded state. And so what we feel when it comes up, there may be an entire array of other conditions that become apparent that help this meditation to understand this mind, this body. Sometimes the feelings we have in our body are just feelings in our body. Sometimes the feelings in our body actually relate to our other feelings and what we're going through. And so to have time to see that maybe some of these feelings, these uncomfortable feelings have in our body may actually have relations with previous experience from childhood, maybe even before this life, and to try to understand them so that they're not an impediment to our practice. They're a gift to the practice. They're a gift to opening the heart. They're a gift to the continuing determination to take the next step forward in this life. And in not long, it's over. Mike Newhall, our director here, guiding teacher, he found out yesterday one of his close friends in Wisconsin has pancreatic cancer. So that guy's time is short. You know, how do you take the next step when time is that short? And you have to. You have to take the next step. But we don't know how long our time is, so be careful with each step. Be careful with our words. Be kind in our actions. See where you can help. And become part of that dance. I'd like to hear from you, from some notions you have, some experiences you have, some questions. Yes, Karin.
We know that Buddha went straight for it, and how did this idea came about, or how they are in this path.
I don't know when the concept developed and started. In studying the Bodhisattva vows, though, and reading about how Buddha conducted his life in his Sangha, he practiced them, and his others in his Sangha were encouraged to practice that as well. I'm going to speculate here a little. Buddhism divided into basically three branches, the Theravadin, Hinayana, the Mahayana, and the Tibetan lineage, Vajrayana. And usually the Hinayana was always described as monks on the path for their own enlightenment, and they weren't on a bodhisattva path. But in Mahayana Buddhism, it took off. I would kind of imagine that with communications that we have today worldwide, that even Theravadins are practice the Bodhisattva vows as well. I mean, it's just natural. So I think it's, origin was early, but it's a good question. I'll try to research that. Yes, Ross.
One thing to ask about for Oriope, every time I have it, I in Crooked Cucumber, I think of the how Suzuki Roshi, they often were starving during the war and times like that. And so to me, the feeling is, wow, there's just so much food we have, and it's like we're so lucky to just be able to eat all that we want, enough, or whatever the word is, mm-hmm. just enough. And yeah, it's sort of like incredible that somebody like Suzuki Roshi had no food, and they had very little food. But one of my questions is, at work, I deal with a lot of people, maybe 50, 60 people, through a lot of it's through emails and meetings and things like that. And for the most part, it's easy to be gracious and try to respond in a timely fashion and help people out. But there's this one woman I'm managing recently, and it's almost like everything I say, she pushes back. And like, well, why do I have to do that? Or don't do, and it's like, and so one day it was just like this anger just comes up, and it's just like, and so it was like the feeling as well, am I this person who, if everybody cooperates, I can be pleasant to and responsive, or am I really the guy who, like, if you don't work with me, there's a lot more anger there. And I don't know if that's a question or I don't know what my, it's like, well, what's going on? How do I feel when I'm doing these practicing that it's not just some sort of fakeness? Or, I don't know what I'm saying.
So there's probably a lot more going on than just the task that you're wanting to have her do. And it sounds like there's a lot of resistance there. Is it possible to explore the source of that and not be concerned about the task at hand right now, but it might be that to, she has all these questions, but there's obviously anxiety or tension or something around it, or the authority, she has a problem with authority, and how can one ask a question? Why do I have to do this? What well, is this what we got to do? But then is there a way to kind of ask her a question that might open her to examine the conditions of her questioning? Not that they're wrong, but I mean, she needs to do it, and they come hot at you, don't they? I mean, it's like, and then you get mad, because it's like, what else do you do? How do you react to it? I'd do that too. But with this kind of distance of at least 20 miles and several days or weeks, you know, there's a different perspective, but is it possible to inquire with her on how she's really doing and make a heart connection with her before engaging her in the work that needs to happen? Show your humanness and hear her humanness. And when we hear another being's humanness, it comes with this really deep respect. So in a way, if you're going to do that, in a way, you have to pull yourself out of your manager role and be a human being with another human being without the hierarchy that job imposes, and take care of the being in the moment. And sometimes we have to step out of role in order to do the needful thing. Yes, Annie?
I know the bell rang, but this reminds me, Ross, your question reminds me of something that I've been thinking about with my work, working with clients and things. And sometimes it's really good to break the fourth wall. Like, the fourth wall, where, like, you know, you're watching a story and suddenly the character does direct address and looks right at the camera and speaks to the audience. There's almost something like that in professional situations to you or coworkers. You're stepping out of the role, like what you just said, Doug, and you're just connecting. And you may show your flaws. You may show your vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And there's risk involved. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going to happen. It's like you leave the uncertainty of the role and the model that you're working with, or the assumptions that you're working in, and you step a little bit into the unknown. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting what can happen there. So it's something to play with. I don't have an answer necessarily, but I've been finding that very interesting.
Yeah, come meditate and play with the unknown. That's what we do. It's like, what's going on? What's going on with this mind? It's a marvelous thing. Hopefully we can approach it with a sense of humor.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.